Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show at your place. When this show first started, we took efforts to take on the hard topics that many stay away from or try to push their agenda without really pushing the boundaries. We've had a lot of people asking us why we have strayed so far from doing this. For those that have been watching news highlights, you've seen the unusual weather patterns and more shootings in public places. We've noticed the big push to force-feed the public, same-sex marriage and venues that have nothing to do with marriage, while at the same time trying to discount faith-based agenda as an enemy of the public good. So know that, like many of you, we are aware of all that is happening around the world. While Bill felt that the best response was to handpick some of the positive sermons to help people of faith remember where to keep their priority. With that said, Wild Bill wanted to let you know that he is not running scared from taking on the tough topics. So we're going to bring you the State of the Union address in our own style. As always, we don't claim to be the experts on the topics discussed. You have a chance to share your voice and thoughts so that you can be heard and put on record. We think that we all learn when we take the time to really listen to both sides and come up with an educated opinion with all the facts. And now, let's have a listen. Wild Bill just texted me and said that we have no sound. Please press 1 if you hear me. I guess it's Wild Bill that didn't hear me. Anyway, we're going to go on to the show and see what see what Wild Bill has for us tonight. Let's have a listen.
Well, hello, Starla. Hello, everyone out there in Blog Talk Radio land. Y'all have to excuse my voice. I got a little bit of this croup or crud or whatever it is that calls going around. We've had a lot of comments from people wanting to know if we've kind of lost our guts where we used to, you know, cover things that have to do with, you know, what's going on in the world and, you know, allowing people to post comments on it and then trying to put a twist on it to get people to think outside the box. Well, to show that we've not lost any of our guts and that we're just as brain dead as ever, we're going to take a few moments, so we're going to cover the State of the Union address that the President delivered just this last week. And we want, as always, to let you know that you're welcome to post any comments or things that you have. This first little bit of information I'm going to give you is just highlights of the State of the Union. So we're going to play that, and then we'll come back to you here in just a second.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Tonight, this chamber speaks with one voice to the people we represent. It is you, our citizens, who make the state of our union strong. And I believe that here in America, our success should depend not on accident of birth, but the strength of our work ethic. That's how the daughter of a factory worker is CEO of America's largest automaker, how the son of a barkeep is Speaker of the House. How the son of a single mom can be president of the greatest nation on earth. When people come here to fulfill their dreams, to study, invest, contribute to our culture, they make our country a more attractive place for businesses to locate and create jobs for everybody. So let's get immigration reform done this year. It is time to do away with workplace policies that belong in a Mad Men episode. This year, let's all come together. Congress, the White House, businesses from Wall Street to Main Street, to give every woman the opportunity she deserves, because I believe when women succeed, America succeeds. I will issue an executive order requiring federal contractors to pay their federally funded employees a fair wage of at least $10.10 an hour, because if you cook our troops' meals or wash their dishes, you should not have to live in poverty. I first met Corey Remsburg at Omaha Beach a few months later on his 10th deployment. Corey was nearly killed by a massive roadside bomb in Afghanistan. And like the Army he loves, like the America he serves, Sergeant First Class Corey Remsburg never gives up, and he does not quit. Corey. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Okay, I just want to share that I did not put those sound bites together. I went actually on Tuesday night after we did our show last week. I wanted to get the immediate response of what the press had to say, and this is what one of the news forums for internet had put together for the sound bites for the address. Now, before you can say anything, because I know where you're going with this, you know that I hate sound bite mentality. You hear me preach it, teach it, argue it all the time, how we live in a time to where we're just spoon-fed what the press wants us to get. I would have shared the entire State of the Union address, but it's about an hour and 10 minutes long, although I have a funny feeling if I'd went back and deleted all the applause for the pauses that was in there, we might could have got it in, and I may look at doing that later just to have it as part of the records of our show. But with that being said, I just want to bring you another clip now. What I did was I went the night of the State of the Union after our radio show last week, and I wanted to get immediate response of what the press or politicians or public had to say. And, I mean, this was just right after it was over. So what I have for you now is actually a response. It was on a news media outlet that had to do with two people that actually they both worked in the Reagan administration. One of them actually is a political analyst, I think, and he works for Fox. The other one actually is part of a think tank, political think tank. So we're not going to just leave this with my sound bites that I played here. Don't you think I'm trying to push one agenda or another. So we're going to turn to this now and hope you enjoy.
We're joined in Washington by my colleague, former colleague at the Wall Street Journal, now the president of the Pew Research Center, Alan Murray. Alan, really glad to have you back on WSJ.com. Good to be here.
And David Stockman, former budget director in the Reagan White House, a guy who's been through a few of these State of the Union addresses, is with me here in New York. David, good to see you.
Glad to be here.
And let me start with you. What did you hear that struck you as being surprising or different, if anything?
Well, I don't think it was terribly surprising. Look, I think first and foremost he focused on the issues that our polls show the American people really care about. He talked about the economy. He talked about jobs and measures to create more jobs. So in that sense, he was very much in tune with the American people. Also talked, of course, about raising the minimum wage and extending unemployment benefits. And those are also fairly popular measures with the people. You pointed out, Jerry, that he did talk about inequality deepening. But I have to say I was a little surprised about how quickly he moved beyond that. That's a more divisive topic. That's one that divides Republicans and Democrats because many Republicans think the focus on inequality can be counterproductive. I didn't think he spent that much time on that. I thought it was a quick mention and moved on, contrary to some of the press that we heard prior to the speech.
Well, that's true. And David Stockman, you know, there is income inequality in the U.S. There's also a question about whether the government can or should really do anything about that. Is that maybe one of the reasons that we've moved on beyond that tonight already?
Well, I think also, ironically, there's a question of what's the major agency today that's causing the income inequality to increase in the wealth inequality. And I think it's clearly the policy of the Fed and zero interest rates and crushing savers and the incentive it gives to speculation and the 1% and the Wall Street hedge funds and so forth. Now, that's something he could do something about because the president appoints the next chairman of the Fed, the last one, and what has he done? He's appointed basically wealth effects people who I believe are conducting policies that are making these issues worse. Now, most of the speech was ritualized rhetoric. It was well delivered, but it was content-free. Immigration reform is important. It's something Congress can do something about. It was one paragraph. Raising the minimum wage is a terrible idea. The House at least knows that. And yet he had to demagogue that issue because it sounds good with the public. So I think this was probably the worst State of the Union address he's given yet. But I think we're at the point where there really isn't much that government can do about these huge economic and job problems facing the country.
Well, Alan, before I come back to you, you know, David's talking about the focus on workers in the middle class, and you know, every State of the Union speech is to some extent an homage to the middle class. Let's hear a part of what the president said on that subject.
Our job is to reverse these trends. It won't happen right away, and we won't agree on everything. But what I offer tonight is a set of concrete, practical proposals to speed up growth, strengthen the middle class, and build new ladders of opportunity into the middle class.
Alan, were there concrete proposals there to deal with closing the gaps in income in America?
Well, as we've already talked about, he talked about raising the minimum wage, he talked about extending unemployment benefits, sort of increasing the safety net. He talked some about education, and he talked about corporate tax reform, which could arguably have an effect on creating jobs. So, yeah, I think there were some specific things. But, again, I don't think he focused a lot on closing the gap, which is a somewhat different matter. And, Jerry, let me raise another issue that, you know, when you think about how much time over the last few years has been spent on the issue of the budget deficit, very little in this speech about the budget deficit. That issue seems to have moved to a back burner, and we see that in our polls as well. The American public less concerned about the budget deficit than it's been in past years.
That's a good point, and David, I want to pick up there, but first let me remind people that Washington State Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers is going to give the Republican response to the State of the Union in a few minutes, and when that happens, we'll turn to her. But it is true that the deficit isn't the boogeyman it was a couple of years ago. It hasn't slipped off the radar screen in Washington, but this speech tonight was a pretty good indication it's lower down. It's dropping. There's a kind of a school of thought that the Washington has spent too much time worrying about cutting the deficits over the last few years.
at a cost to the real economy. Is that right?
And I think that's totally wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the elephant in the room that wasn't acknowledged. Usually the State of the Union address in my day had list after list after list of what Johnson was going to do, Nixon was going to do, even Reagan, for the American economy. There was almost no list in here because the federal government is broke. Now, the deficit is only $700 or $800 billion, but we're 5 years into this recovery. Sooner or later, there will be a recession. The deficit will soar again. People in Washington know that. That's why there's no laundry list of new spending, new tax giveaways, and so forth. And yet, that's the only thing that really would probably impact the economy.
But in a way, that's kind of a strange sign of success, I guess, for a Republican agenda. I mean, back in the day, people thought that in the Ronald Reagan world thought if you starved the government of revenue to start new social programs, that process would stop. That's kind of where we are. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, Jerry, I think it was a modest agenda. He was not... Look, remember what happened last year. You know, we had a lot of talk about immigration reform, a lot of talk about gun control, and nothing happened.
Yeah.
It seems that the White House made a conscious decision here not to put a whole bunch of things on the table that they had no chance of getting, and not to pick big fights that were going to lead to gridlock. So you didn't hear a lot of that in this speech. Relatively modest proposals. You know, when he talks about going to American corporations and asking them to try harder to hire the long-term unemployed, well, that's great. That's a good thing, but it's not a big initiative, and it's going to be difficult to measure its success.
Yeah, you know, that's true. David, I did a column in the Journal today, and I said we're sort of in the era of small ball in Washington.
Right.
That's the reality of the fiscal condition of the country and the federal government.
We're also in a condition of partisan paralysis as to what the options are. None of this could get through the House, and that's why he didn't have a list. And frankly, there is huge difference about whether you should extend unemployment benefits. There's a case against it. Whether you should raise the minimum wage, there's a huge case against it. Obviously, we need to be addressing the deficit, but no one thinks that it's urgent at the moment. So I think government is basically, on automatic pilot. There will be a lot of political posturing and maneuvering, getting prepared for the 2014 elections. But nothing happened in 2013 in off year, and it's virtually certain that no agenda could be adopted now.
But Jerry, let's just be clear about this. There is an intellectual case to be made against raising the minimum wage and an intellectual case against extending unemployment insurance, but they are popular items.
Yeah.
Our polls show 73% of the American public favors a modest increase in the minimum wage. 63% of the American public favors extending unemployment benefits. So in calling out those things, the president is playing to the
point. We're now going to go to actually something that was recorded before the State of the Union, and it was in regard to the problem it seems the president has that he can't get anything that he's trying to do in his agenda passed. Of course, some of you out there are like, yay, thank God, and there's others like, are you like, yeah, why can't we kind of get the ball rolling out in one direction to try to get something done? This is all part of the political process, but anyway, this was talking about, you know, can the president really expect to be able to do anything, you know, with or on his own? Because without the House of Representatives, which we've seen has seemed to be able to stop just about everything in his tracks, except for the new Health Care Act, which is funny, some of the response to this, a lot of people know that my sister Joy, she's a huge fan of many of the agenda of our president, and but I was talking to her the other day, and she was telling me how that, man, I'm not too sure how I feel about this, because now I'm being forced to have to pay for insurance. And so it's that yin and yang thing of politics and policy in regard to how it affects us as to how we think about it. It affects us many ways. I have a lot of thought process on this whole thing, and we may come back and cover some of this later. But anyway, I just wanted to share some highlights here also of what someone said in regard to, can the president do it alone?
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jerry Seid. Moments from now, President Obama is expected to present his State of the Union address to an unsettled nation, a public lukewarm on the president's ability to get things done, and a Congress characterized by gridlock. It's a critical night, one that could shape the nation's policy direction for the next 3 years. Our first guest to talk about all this evening is former North Dakota Senator Byron Dorgan, a Democrat who served 30 years in Congress. He joins us from Washington. Senator Dorgan, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You know, the early excerpts we've seen from the White House indicate this. The president's going to talk tonight about how he wants to work with Congress, but he will also act on his own and, in his words, wherever and whenever he can to expand the economic opportunity of Americans. Is that a good idea, or are those fighting words in Congress?
Well, I don't know that they're fighting words, but every president comes... I mean, this is a great pageantry, this State of the Union. I sat through 30 years of them in the chamber for a State of the Union address, and they're always well-written and well-rehearsed, but the president will always come and say, I'd like to work with the Congress. But the fact is, things aren't working very well on Capitol Hill. As you know, there's very little cooperation. And the big issues that we need doing, tax reform, immigration reform, investment in infrastructure, making our fiscal policy add up, I mean, those things aren't getting done.
You know, two words we're bound to hear tonight are income inequality, a theme that the president's going to make the hallmark of this year. One of the questions I think people will wonder about is that something the government can do anything about? Is that something this president and Congress can agree on when it comes to doing something about income inequality?
Well, I mean, listen, income inequality is an issue. It's not to denigrate any group of people, no matter what they earn or don't earn, but I think the country's economy and the well-being of the country is best served by trying to lift everybody up, and we have a lot of people that need jobs, so there are some things you can do. The minimum wage issue, I think we should increase the minimum wage. There are some education issues and other things that we can do to try to reduce the inequality of income, but doing that means lifting people up. It doesn't mean punishing anyone.
And can you imagine a Congress in which Republicans control the House actually agreeing on a plan to lift the minimum wage this year? We're going to hear it tonight. Is it realistic?
Well, I think it's very hard to get anything through the U.S. House, anything that the president wants. I mean, President Obama has found that almost everything dies in the U.S. House of Representatives as long as he proposes it, and that's too bad. I think we should get the best of what both parties have to offer this country rather than the worst of each.
But, you know, there has been a little progress in the last couple of months. You know, there was a budget deal done at the end of last year. There was an appropriations package that funds that budget done earlier this year. The farm bill seems to be getting done. Is there a chance the freeze is thawing just a bit in Congress?
I sure hope so. I think the American people hope so. And the country would be well advantaged if things became a little bit less contentious and there were a little more cooperation. But, you know, the fiscal issue that the agreement that was reached was really a baby step. But still, a baby step in the right direction is certainly progress given what's happened in Congress recently.
Well, you know, you've spent a lot of your career in Congress worrying about the budget deficit, trying to create some an atmosphere for some fiscal responsibility. Has the deficit slid down the list of priorities in Washington in the last few months?
Well, I don't think it has necessarily. It hasn't been discussed as much. But our fiscal policy is still out of balance, and we need to fix it. You know, it's just a fact. And at the same time, I think both parties should understand one of the ways to fix it, not the only way, is to grow the economy. But you need to do much more than that. But both parties ought to agree on certain principles that would help grow this economy. That would address a lot of issues, including income inequality.
Senator Dorgan, thanks for joining us. We'll get to watch together tonight. Hope we can talk afterwards.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, taking this one step further down the road, here's a GOP response about cooperation with what the president said after the speech.
I will direct the Treasury to create a new way for working Americans to start their own retirement savings. My IRA. It's a new savings bond that encourages folks to build a nest egg.
So that's President Obama tonight introducing a new kind of IRA, MyRA he called it, Guaranteed Rate of Return. We're going to talk about that and some other things now with Republican former governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty, who's now CEO of the Financial Services Roundtable, joining us from Washington. Governor Pawlenty, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
So let's start with that IRA. What do you think of it? Is it a gimmick or is it a good idea?
Well, I think we all should salute the idea of more people saving more money, especially for retirement. But, Jerry, we don't have enough of the details yet to know what structure this would take, whether it's going to be a government-sponsored and administrative program, kind of like Obamacare, or whether it's going to be privately run. Apparently some more details are going to be forthcoming tomorrow when he's in Pittsburgh, and we'll have to see what he has to say about how it's structured.
Let me step back and take a broader look. When you look at the speech in its entirety, what did you find reassuring, and what did you find worrisome?
Well, it really was a laundry list, a repeat laundry list of things that he's talked about in the past. And so of the 41 or so items he teed up last year in the State of the State, apparently 39 of them didn't move forward or didn't take action. So it's a good reminder of what he wants to do, but I hope now he'll focus on a smaller number of things that could actually get done, because I think the American people want to see results in action, not just speeches. But a few of the things that I liked, of course, we'd love to see tax reform, pro-growth tax reform. We'd love to see patent reform as America strives to be in the most innovative country in the world, continue to be the most innovative country in the world. We don't want to have lawsuits that get in the way that are not meritorious of innovation and reform and a proper patent system. Loved the section on natural gas and the natural gas future that we might have to further reduce energy interdependence with the Middle East and other places. So there's some good parts in there. There's some other parts that weren't so good.
Well, immigration reform, obviously that's a big item. Didn't get much space or time in the speech tonight, but it's something the business community tends to support. You've been watching this debate. What are the chances that can get done this year?
Well, for 2014, it doesn't look like the chances are high. I think the President and the Senate have proposed a comprehensive bill. The House wants to do it in pieces, and so they don't have even procedural alignment, much less substantive alignment, Jerry. I do think our system is broken. It needs to be fixed. We do need a reform, but it doesn't look like they're poised to actually do it in 2014.
And when you look at an issue like the minimum wage, is that a consensus item right now on the agenda, or does it look like one of those things that's going to be debated rather than acted upon this year?
Well, it'll be debated. In my personal view, and when I was governor, I signed a minimum wage. I also vetoed one or two. I think if you're going to have a minimum wage, you should reasonably adjust it from time to time. The question is how often and how much. And I think a reasonable case can be made that it should be adjusted from time to time. So that's something I think you could find common ground on if the president was reasonable. But going from where it is now to over $10 an hour, I think would be viewed by many members of Congress as too big of a leap.
One other big issue the president didn't really dwell on at all tonight is the debt ceiling. We're going to hit the debt ceiling sometime in about a month. The business community, your friends in the financial community in particular, have been worried about playing chicken with the debt ceiling. What does your gut tell you about the chances for getting beyond the debt ceiling crisis point with more ease this time?
I think it is going to get resolved with more ease this time, Jerry, because I don't think the Republicans have the appetite to touch that stove again and trigger a default and put the country in that kind of situation. I think they didn't come out well from that debate last time. I think they may make some rhetorical flourishes around the debt ceiling, but I don't think they have the appetite for actually going into the abyss on that issue coming up here in the next few months.
Well, we'll know soon enough, Governor Pawlenty. Thanks for joining.
Okay, moving right along. I was really surprised the GOP official response came from one person, and it seemed very canned. It didn't seem like it covered a whole lot of the topics. It seemed like it talked more about this person's background history, talked about in broad terms some things about America, what it stands for, what the GOP stands for, but not really a lot of substance to this. But there again, being fair to everyone, this was the GOP official response right after the speech was over. Okay, moving right along. I was really surprised the GOP official response came from one person. Okay, we're covering everything from both sides, as you can see. One of the things I wanted to do was some of the information was kind of vaguely put out in the highlights. Want to put some more information on some of the key points that was made during the speech.
Have argued that our tax code is riddled with wasteful, complicated loopholes that punish businesses investing here and reward companies that keep profits abroad. Let's flip that equation. Let's work together to close those loopholes and those incentives to ship jobs overseas and lower tax rates for businesses that create jobs right here at home. Moreover, we can take the money we save from this transition to tax reform to create jobs, rebuilding our roads, upgrading our ports, unclogging our commutes. Because in today's global economy, first-class jobs gravitate to first-class infrastructure. We'll need Congress to protect more than 3 million jobs by finishing transportation and waterways bills this summer. That can happen. But I'll act on my own to slash bureaucracy and streamline the permitting process for key projects so we can get more construction workers on the job as fast as possible. We also have the chance right now to beat other countries in the race for the next wave of high-tech manufacturing jobs. And my administration's launched two hubs for high-tech manufacturing in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Youngstown, Ohio, where we've connected businesses to research universities that can help America lead the world in advanced technologies. Tonight, I'm announcing we'll launch six more this year. Bipartisan bills in both houses could double the number of these hubs and the jobs they create. So get those bills to my desk. Put more Americans back to work. Let's do more to help the entrepreneurs and small business owners who create most new jobs in America. Over the past 5 years, my administration has made more loans to small business owners than any other. And when 98% of our exporters are small businesses, new trade partnerships with Europe and the Asia Pacific will help them create even more jobs. We need to work together on tools like bipartisan trade promotion authority to protect our workers, protect our environment, and open new markets to new goods stamped made in the USA. Listen, China and Europe aren't standing on the sidelines. Neither should we. We know that the nation that goes all in on innovation today will own the global economy tomorrow. This is an edge America cannot surrender. Federally funded research helped lead to the ideas and inventions behind Google and smartphones, and that's why Congress should undo the damage done by last year's cuts to basic research so we can unleash the next great American discovery. There are entire industries to be built based on vaccines that stay ahead of drug-resistant bacteria or paper-thin material that's stronger than steel. And let's pass a patent reform bill that allows our businesses to stay focused on innovation, not costly and needless litigation. Now, one of the biggest factors in bringing more jobs back is our commitment to American energy. The all-the-above energy strategy I announced a few years ago is working, and today America is closer to energy independence than we have been in decades. One of the reasons why is natural gas. If extracted safely It's the bridge fuel that can power our economy with less of the carbon pollution that causes climate change. Businesses plan to invest almost $100 billion in new factories that use natural gas. I'll cut red tape to help states get those factories built and put folks to work. And this Congress can help by putting people to work building fueling stations that shift more cars and trucks from foreign oil to American natural gas. Meanwhile, my administration will keep working with the industry to sustain production and jobs growth while strengthening protection of our air, our water, our communities. And while we're at it, I'll use my authority to protect more of our pristine federal lands for future generations. It's not just oil and natural gas production that's booming. We're becoming a global leader in solar, too. Every 4 minutes, another American home or business goes solar. Every panel pounded into place by a worker whose job cannot be outsourced. Let's continue that progress with a smarter tax policy that stops giving $4 billion a year to fossil fuel industries that don't need it so we can invest more in fuels of the future that do. Tonight, because of the extraordinary troops and civilians who risk and lay down their lives to keep us free, the United States is more secure. When I took office, nearly 180,000 Americans were serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Today, all our troops are out of Iraq. More than 60,000 of our troops have already come home from Afghanistan. With Afghan forces now in the lead for their own security, our troops have moved to a support role. Together with our allies, we will complete our mission there by the end of this year, and America's longest war will finally be over. After 2014, we will support a unified Afghanistan as it takes responsibility for its own future. If the Afghan government signs a security agreement that we have negotiated, a small force of Americans could remain in Afghanistan with NATO allies to carry out two narrow missions: training and assisting Afghan forces and counterterrorism operations to pursue any remnants of al-Qaeda. For while our relationship with Afghanistan will change, one thing will not: our resolve that terrorists do not launch attacks against our country. The fact is, that danger remains. While we've put al-Qaeda's core leadership on a path to defeat, the threat has evolved as al-Qaeda affiliates and other extremists take root in different parts of the world. In Yemen, Somalia, Iraq, Mali, we have to keep working with partners to disrupt and disable those networks. In Syria, we'll support the opposition that rejects the agenda of terrorist networks. Here at home, we'll keep strengthening our defenses and combat new threats like cyber attacks. And as we reform our defense budget, we will have to keep faith with our men and women in uniform and invest in the capabilities they need to succeed in future missions. We have to remain vigilant. But I strongly believe our leadership and our security cannot depend on our outstanding military alone. As Commander-in-Chief, I have used force when needed to protect the American people. And I will never hesitate to do so as long as I hold this office. But I will not send our troops into harm's way unless it is truly necessary, nor will I allow our sons and daughters to be mired in open-ended conflicts. We must fight the battles that need to be fought, not those that terrorists prefer from us, large-scale deployments that drain our strength and may ultimately feed extremism. So even as we actively and aggressively pursue terrorist networks, through more targeted efforts and by building the capacity of our foreign partners, America must move off a permanent war footing. That's why I've imposed prudent limits on the use of drones. For we will not be safer if people abroad believe we strike within their countries without regard for the consequence. That's why, working with this Congress, I will reform our surveillance programs, because the vital work of our intelligence community depends on public confidence, here and abroad, that privacy of ordinary people is not being violated. And with the Afghan war ending, this needs to be the year Congress lifts the remaining restrictions on detainee transfers and we close the prison at Guantanamo Bay. Because we counter terrorism not just through intelligence and military action, but by remaining true to our constitutional ideals and setting an example for the rest of the world. You see, in a world of complex threats, our security, our leadership depends on all elements of our power, including strong and principled diplomacy. American diplomacy has rallied more than 50 countries to prevent nuclear materials from falling into the wrong hands and allowed us to reduce our own reliance on Cold War stockpiles. American diplomacy, backed by the threat of force, is why Syria's chemical weapons are being eliminated. And we will continue to work with the international community to usher in the future the Syrian people deserve, a future free of dictatorship, terror, and fear. As we speak, American diplomacy is supporting Israelis and Palestinians as they engage in the difficult but necessary talks to end the conflict there, to achieve dignity and an independent state for Palestinians, and lasting peace and security for the state of Israel. A Jewish state that knows America will always be at their side. And few are more effective at reducing inequality and helping families pull themselves up through hard work than the earned income tax credit. Right now, it helps about half of all parents at some point. Think about that. It helps about half of all parents in America at some point in their lives. But I agree with Republicans like Senator Rubio that it doesn't do enough for single workers who don't have kids. So let's work together to strengthen the credit, reward work, help more Americans get ahead. Let's do more to help Americans save for retirement. Today, most workers don't have a pension. A Social Security check often isn't enough on its own. And while the stock market has doubled over the last 5 years, that doesn't help folks who don't have 401ks. That's why tomorrow I will direct the Treasury to create a new way for working Americans to start their own retirement savings. My IRA. It's a new savings bond that encourages folks to build a nest egg. My IRA guarantees a decent return with no risk of losing what you put in. And if this Congress wants to help, work with me to fix an upside-down tax code that gives big tax breaks to help the wealthy save, but does little or nothing for middle-class Americans. Offer every American access to an automatic IRA on the job so they can save at work just like everybody in this chamber can. And since the most important investment many families make is their home, send me legislation that protects taxpayers from footing the bill for a housing crisis ever again and keeps the dream of home ownership alive for future generations. One last point on financial security. For decades, few things exposed hardworking families to economic hardship more than a broken health care system. And in case you haven't heard, we're in the process of fixing that. A pre-existing condition used to mean that someone like Amanda Shelley, a physician's assistant and single mom from Arizona, couldn't get health insurance. But on January 1st, she got covered. On January 3rd, she felt a sharp pain. On January 6th, she had emergency surgery. Just 1 week earlier, Amanda said, and that surgery would have meant bankruptcy. That's what health insurance reform is all about. The peace of mind that if misfortune strikes, you don't have to lose everything. Already, because of the Affordable Care Act, more than 3 million Americans under age 26 have gained coverage under their parents' plan. More than 9 million Americans have signed up for private health insurance or Medicaid coverage. 9 million. And here's another number, zero. Because of this law, no American, none, zero, can ever again be dropped or denied coverage for a pre-existing condition like asthma or back pain or cancer. No woman can ever be charged more just because she's a woman. And we did all this while adding years to Medicare's finances, keeping Medicare premiums flat, and lowering prescription costs for millions of seniors. Now, I do not expect to convince my Republican friends on the merits of this law. But I know that the American people are not interested in refighting old battles. So, again, if you have specific plans to cut costs, cover more people, increase choice, tell America what you do differently. Let's see if the numbers add up. But let's not have another 40-something votes to repeal a law that's already helping millions of Americans like Amanda. First 40 were plenty. We all owe it to the American people to say what we're for, not just what we're against. And if you want to know the real impact this law is having, just talk to Governor Steve Beshear of Kentucky, who's here tonight. Now, Kentucky is not the most liberal part of the country. That's not where I got my highest vote totals. But he's like a man possessed when it comes to covering his Commonwealth's families. They're our neighbors and our friends, he said. They're people we shop and go to church with. farmers out on the tractor, grocery clerks. They're people who go to work every morning praying they don't get sick. No one deserves to live that way. Steve's right. That's why tonight I ask every American who knows someone without health insurance to help them get covered by March 31st. Help them get covered. Moms, get on your kids to sign up. Kids, call your mom and walk her through the application. They'll give her some peace of mind, and plus she'll appreciate hearing from you. After all, that's the spirit that has always moved this nation forward. It's the spirit of citizenship. The recognition that through hard work and responsibility, we can pursue our individual dreams but still come together as one American family to make sure the next generation can pursue its dreams as well. Citizenship means standing up for everyone's right to vote. Last year, part of the Voting Rights Act was weakened, but conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats are working together to strengthen it. And the bipartisan commission I appointed, chaired by my campaign lawyer and Governor Romney's campaign lawyer, came together and have offered reforms so that no one has to wait more than a half hour to vote. Let's support these efforts. It should be the power of our vote, not the size of our bank account, that drives our democracy. Citizenship means standing up for the lives that gun violence steals from us each day. I've seen the courage of parents, students, pastors, police officers all over this country who say, we are not afraid. And I intend to keep trying, with or without Congress, to help stop more tragedies from visiting innocent Americans in our movie theaters and our shopping malls or schools like Sandy Hook. Citizenship demands a sense of common purpose, participation in the hard work of self-government, an obligation to serve our communities. And I know this chamber agrees that few Americans give more to their country than our diplomats and the men and women of the United States Armed Forces.
Okay, as always, I push people to think outside the box. What we want you to do is think. And for us to be able to grow our knowledge base and to get some other insight into this, we want to hear what you have to say. I see where many of you post things on Facebook. A lot of you have opinions. They say that opinions are like noses. Everybody has one. But this is your chance to go on record and publicly say what you think about the president's agenda, his response to what's going on in our country, what you think about having to do with faith and politics, just whatever. The only thing that you need to understand is real clear, we don't allow any cursing, anything like that. You will be disconnected, and we will block you from being able to air on our show anymore through your number. About anything else, it doesn't matter if I agree with what you have to say. It doesn't agree if I feel like what you're saying is derogatory towards what I think is, you know, positive for our nation or having to do with things of faith. This is your chance to go on record and say what it is that's on your mind and in your heart. So let it rip, Tater Chip.
Well, I guess that's my cue. I'm so sorry for the gaps in the speech. I was having technical difficulties, and you might call my computer a dinosaur. Anyway, we worked through it,
and praise God. And we have Blog Talk Mom with us. How are you tonight, Blog Talk Mom?
I'm fine, and I want to compliment you because I have already known through your bells that that is a very difficult job, and I think you do. I appreciate both of you for going to the trouble to put that on the air. As you know, I'm not what you would call a political person as far as listening to what the news would say about it. You know, I really have zero confidence in that type of covering for political issues because people are so biased and so cruel. And I've personally witnessed some things in, you know, through history that were just not very trustworthy. But I do know that every Christian has a responsibility to pray for those that have not just their pastors and missionaries and situations, but those that God has placed. And I believe God raises people up to be president. I have been told that I will go to hell for that belief, but I think that's amusing for some reason. But that someone would say that. But my point is that he will give us those over us after our own heart. There's a scripture, I can't recall it right now, but and to pray. We have such great power in prayer. And personally, I really like President Obama. I like everything he says. I like his deliverance. I like his courage. I really appreciate him. And I think he's an extremely moral man, a family man. He's just, I think that if all of America would just get behind him and be very prayerful, that we could get a lot of wonderful things done. And I'm not that learned in those things, so I do greatly appreciate this program to let me hear it, and let me hear it in a way that I can see both sides of it. And it's very enjoyable. I appreciate it. I thank you for it.
Well, we sure have people with thoughts or opinions here tonight that would like to share their viewpoint or make a comment. We'll put you on the air live. No takers. Well, Bill?
Hey, Stella. I apologize. There was a lot of links to this show tonight, and it's a pretty complicated process. When your computer freezes, it's very nerve-wracking. Then you got someone that's, you know, a couple hundred miles away sending you text messages like, hey, I don't hear anything. I'm sure that doesn't help either. So I was sending her four messages, and she let me know. I'm like, I think you skipped a link. And she's like, I know my numbers. The computer's freezing. So it's pretty nerve-wracking when you're sitting there pushing buttons and nothing happens, and then all of a sudden something starts playing again. You're like, where is that coming from? And because it's a delay, that reaction from where you tried to play it the first time. So I want to thank you so much for trying to get that out there, because this had a lot of parts to it, more probably than any show we've done in a long, long time. And I did want to give people an opportunity to share their thoughts. I was kind of surprised with Blog Talk's mom endorsement there as to the liking of our president. But, you know, one point on that I like to share is whether you like it or not, he's your president. He represents you. And so with that being said, the prayer process for our leaders is very important. I had a friend of mine that on Facebook the other day made a comment that wanted to know if I was a communist. I mean, I got really upset at some of the things that I was sharing when I was looking at all the information on the health care. And it's one of those things that there's always two sides to things. And even sometimes I wonder if politics is like wrestling. You know, it's all pre-staged and it's all just one agenda. And when you realize that sin has affected this world and it affects all of us, but God is in control of all of us. See, we want to give the devil credit for the things that we don't agree with and the things that we don't like, how it affects us and how things are looking as far as a morality in our country and the downfall of morality and how there seems to be an attack against Christianity. And I'm amazed daily when I go to websites and I see things to where There's so many things now where it brings up over information. For instance, I was on Wikipedia the other day looking up the definition of a word, and now it didn't just give you like the original translation of a word and give you the breakdown of it, especially if it's something to do with religious faith. It's going to tell you how the Muslims or Islam looks at that certain viewpoint. It's amazing how they look at so many things the same way we do. You know, when you realize that Abraham was the same father for their nation as he was for the Jewish nation, it blows to mind how we separate things and we judge things, and we want to treat everybody else like idiots that doesn't agree with us, and we're so wrapped up into how things affect us. And I understand that. My company recently did a thing where we know they were playing games with us. They waited until Christmas time to let us know that if we didn't agree for some concessions and benefits and pay, that they were going to file bankruptcy and shut the doors. Now, the way they did it, they made the majority angry because we're not stupid. We know that they knew their bill was coming due in February. To wait till Christmas to sit there and throw it out to us last minute, we were offended. So the majority of the people voted no. Then the company came back with a slightly less compromise, but it still had us giving up, you know, some benefits and things. And they just made it very clear, this is it. You know, this is the bottom of the ninth. If you don't do this, we're going to shut the doors. And then we see these things where we do that, and then we look and we see where CEOs of our company, you know, they, one guy that put us in this situation, I think he got like $800,000 for being fired. I would love to be fired if someone paid me $800,000. I believe I could take a vacation and not worry about working for a while. But it's just the nature of this world that we have to realize things are winding down. When you look at the dream, when you look at the statue that's listed in the Bible, and it talks about things becoming softer material and getting weaker. And that has to do not just with the leadership, but it has to do with the people. I still think that the cream of the crop rises to the top of this nation. But the direction where we're going, I agree with all of you out there, is not good. It's not this thing of where all of a sudden the, my knowledge is better than yours, and the previous generation, you guys just, you know, you're too strict on these things here. We need to open things up so everybody feels accepted. You know, that's bull malarkey, you know, but it's the way things are happening right now. But this is not the Wild Bill, you know, in his soapbox and shout out what he thinks about this. I'd love to hear from some of you out there. Anyone that's got a comment or suggestion or question, just push one, and we will identify you by the last four digits of your phone number. Because I know there's a lot of people. I was talking to a friend last night. He was saying, you know, it's a shame that we have insurance. And he had to go. He's looking at a medical procedure he's going to have to do. And just the pretest for the medical procedures, after his insurance, he's got to come up with $500 and something. In this day and time, $500 and some change is not easy to come up with. It's not for anybody. Well, I can't say for anybody because there's definitely some people out there doing pretty well. I see all the new cars running down the interstate, and where I live at the high school, they got kids with cars there faster than any car I've ever owned. So, I mean, some people seem to be doing pretty well. But with that being said, how much of that is an illusion, too? You know, how much credit's involved, how much of these people in a bind and strain, and if one thing goes wrong, then the whole thing collapses. You know, the truth is we don't know. You know, we think we do, but we don't. So, anyway, I didn't mean to put you on the spot here, Blog Talk Mom, with your comments about our president, but I did want to give you a chance to kind of rebut what I was saying there if you wanted to.
Well, I wasn't anything, Mike, that we didn't agree with on that particular subject. I don't think we all, in business, we were, there was time your dad and I was in business, and it was, you look at things a whole lot different when you're the one that's got to come up with insurance for people, and you have a certain margin of profit, and if you have to spend it, you know, on all of just having a business, on all the laws and all the insurances and all of the just everything that that's involved, then it takes away your initiative. And what I seem to hear him say is that he is aware of that, the president is aware of that, and he's trying to do the right thing for everybody. It doesn't mean that he's trying to put a hardship on businesses, but people must have insurance. this, our world, our United States, is set up in a way that somebody's going to pay for it. If you get sick, somebody's going to pay for it. If you don't have the initiative to get your own insurance and to work a job, then somebody, when you get sick, if you go to the emergency room and you don't have any insurance, and so there you fall under a certain category, but somebody is going to pay that. So to me, it's just good, honest, common sense to be responsible for your own bills, for your own overhead. Don't expect somebody to pick it up. They'll say, oh, well, you know, somebody will do it. Yeah, somebody will. But that's not the way to look at it. Joel Bells and I had talked about the power of just thinking negative thoughts. And if the news media gets everybody stirred up to thinking that the president's trying to take something away from you, it doesn't take long till that negativity just, it spreads like a disease, like a virus, and it has power. But on the other hand, especially we as Christians, if we do recognize he is the president of this United States of America, he did not shoot his way in. That is the dumbest thing that the American people have ever swallowed, is that somehow he maneuvered his way into being president of the United States. No, he did not. He was elected. That means that the majority of the people voted for him. Now, that majority needs to stand behind him and to work with him, and all of us as Americans should have an attitude that if he's our president, we're not going to pull against him, fight against him. Although, on the other hand, I definitely believe in the right to speak up. That I think the freedom of speech is one of the most dynamic, awesome privileges that we have in America. But at the same time, we should be responsible, because in the Bible teaches us there's life and death in the tongue. What we speak, there is life and death. And as far as, you know, so many immoral things that are happening, in one family, just one family of a parent, you know, a man, a woman, and two kids, you can't make your children do anything. You can train them, teach them, but they're going to do what they want to do. And the same with the president. He can't make anybody, you know, he can hold up this standard, this plan. He's got a plan, you know. It just sounds good to me. I think it's an excellent idea. I've worked in areas with poverty, with people that are poverty-stricken, and I've seen the dynamics of that, and I think a plan is great. I hope I'm following your same line of thought.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your input on it and give anybody else a chance, you know, that wanted to come in. I will say this, like most of you out there of faith, I really disagree with the way the laws and our public is being structured now towards things of homosexuality. It's one of those things that you can say something about, you know, God, and in the same, you know, speech, make a comment on how you stand against Christianity. And as one guy saw where they have this television show, and it has to do about their family life where they end in prayer, all of a sudden he was kicked off his own show. The rest of the family could be there, but he couldn't be there anymore. So, I mean, there are some things with the Democratic agenda where it's more liberal. I understand where they're coming from, but I don't agree with it. I understand that they're saying we all have equal rights. We need to respect everyone else's rights. But, you know, laws were made to make things that were immoral wrong a long, long, long time before the United States of America ever existed. God established his laws, and anything that goes against that, I believe, is like weakening your foundation. Well, it is. It's weakening your foundation. And so I understand the people that are upset about this, but the one that really cracks me up, especially on this insurance, is all these people, all you hear is entitlements, entitlements. I hate entitlements. Why are people think they are entitled this and that? And then they're upset with this insurance agenda that makes everyone accountable. You either get the insurance or you pay a fine. It's either or. Now, has the process been smooth? No, they had all the problems with the website. They've had to restructure and change some things. There was the people were told they could keep their insurance, and who knew that insurance companies all of a sudden they were told, hey, you got to keep people with pre-existing conditions. You can't put limitations. For example, I've got some severe neck and back problems. Before, I could go to the doctor, and I could either go to a chiropractor or I could go to physical therapy, and it would treat me for a set amount, and I would be getting better, and then all of a sudden it reached my limit for the year, and I'd have to stop. And so then I would digress back down to where I was before, and the next year I could do it again. Under the new law, as long as I need treatment, my insurance company cannot stop treatment for me. Now, you know, the thing where if you got kids in college now, they don't have to worry about if something happens and they get hurt or they're sick or something like that and not have an insurance. They can stay on their parents' insurance. Insurance is not the fix-all to everything. You know, it'd be nice if my friend I was talking to last night said, man, insurance should cover the medical cost. It should be that you got a deductible to meet, you got a copay to pay, that's reasonable, but it should cover everything 100%. The doctor should have to adjust down. Well, the doctors are not going to be happy about that. The hospitals are not going to be here. You can't please everybody. We live in a society of business and money, and people are all wanting to get their piece of the pie. And as I talked to a doctor one time, I said, you guys think that doctors make all this money? He said, we go to all this extra schooling. We got all these student loans we have to pay for. Our insurance for everything and liability is just, you would not believe what it is. What they say as far as what we got to have for equipment, all the permits, all the inspections, all the hoops we have to jump through. When you meet all that stuff and everything, he said, at the end of the year, he said that, you know, he didn't really make that much more than the average working middle-class man that was out there doing a job every day. But he had a care to want to help people. That's what he wanted to do. So anybody else, please, if you got a comment or something you want to share, we'd love to hear it. I don't see anybody else. Starla, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I think you guys pretty much covered it.
Yeah. Now, Starla's not a big proponent of our president. She sees him with horns and a beard and a tail every time that he's on. I'm not saying that to put her on the spot, but there's a lot of people that feel that way. And you're entitled to your feelings, and you may be more right than I am. But just one thing I want people to realize is that if we had the insurance that covered everything, that is the socialized medicine that you said you didn't want. Insurance is not socialized medicine. So I appreciate everyone listening to this show. I apologize again for all the mistakes and computer problems we were having. But I just wanted people to be able to hear what the public put out as sound bites of it. I played that at the beginning. I played some of the response from before the show. I played some of the response from people after he made his address. And then I actually played some little excerpts as I was able to dig out of certain topics that he talked about. So you can just judge for yourself. The bottom line is right now that the way the House is divided, the majority of the House being GOP, they have a separate agenda. This president's not going to get anything done. I don't believe that he doesn't have the power to do where he can override what's going on with the House of Representatives. Now, I do think that the debt ceiling, hopefully, please God, let it be, that they have learned from our last mistake and how it made us look so stupid to the rest of the world, that whole game we played about not going to take care of our debts, that at least that with some smaller amount of argument and discussion that they get that taken care of. The economy is so fragile. I don't think people really realize where we were just a few short years ago after 9/11, how things just progressed down, and how a lot of counties are just right there on the precipice of just not being here anymore. So with that being said, just the president on it, I can tell you that God's in control. If you're living and walking the life of God, that he's going to ordain your steps, that your prayers, the prayers of a righteous man, you can move mountains with just a little faith of the size of a grain of a mustard seed. And, you know, if you want to be something to change what's going on in this world, the biggest force we have is joining together in prayer. If you don't agree with this president, you can pray that God shuts his mouth, God changes his mind. God can do those things if it's his will to do it. So God bless each and every one of you, and we'll be back next week.